I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live podcast. This is a segment from last week's live video show. You can find either one of the live video shows on either Thursday at 7 p.m. or Sundays at 12:05. And now, on with the show. I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live. Please pay attention to our warning graphic. It states that the Retro Rogues Live show is intended for an adult audience and not intended for children under the age of 13. Parental discretion is advised. I want to welcome you to the show. This is episode 133 of the Retro Rogues Live. On tonight's show, we're going to be talking about some Rogue trading cards. We're going to talk about an interesting pickup that Eric just had for the Kenner Marvel Legends Wave 3. And we've got some LEGO Batman 2 news and much more. Hope that you will stick around and enjoy this episode of the Retro Rogues Live. My name is Dave Beatty. I'm one of your hosts. For nearly the last 30 years, I've been a professional illustrator and graphic designer. Worked on a lot of fun things that some people have heard of, such as Batman Incorporated, Justice League of America, and even Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes. But enough about that. I want to welcome back my great co-host. This is Mr. Eric Alexander. Eric, please tell the folks, hopefully watching or listening at home, some of the fun things you have worked on as a creative professional.
Yes, hello everyone. I'm Eric Alexander, also known as Bass God 14. That's Bass God 14, not Bass God. That's Bass God, like a bass guitar. And I am the chief financial officer of a small production company located out in Arizona called Bad Bob Productions. Currently, we are involved with a film called Staycation, which just finished another round of shooting this last weekend in California.
Very cool. Very cool. So this is our Thursday Collector's Corner focused episode. We're going to talk primarily about collectibles. We'll also be doing a little bit of pop culture, obviously, and potentially even some streaming wars news. All right. So maybe let's just go ahead and get into the trading card picks, if that sounds good to you, Eric.
Yeah, that sounds great.
All right. Very cool. All right.
I'm anxious to see them. I haven't had a chance to see them yet.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I have been incredibly busy. I don't know if you could tell, but I hadn't had time to shave or anything tonight because I've been completely up to my eyeballs in work lately. But this is going to be our first pick for this evening. This is now here. Let me give you a little background on this card before we talk about it. Now, I did some research. I didn't do as intensive research as I like to try and do, but I did do some research looking into Rogue trading cards. We had been previously, in some previous collector's corners, talking about Rogue for comic book speculation picks, like early key appearances of Rogue that are, you know, relatively affordable to pick up. This particular card is very interesting because I'm going to tell you right now, I had no idea this thing even existed. So I'm a little surprised. I'm going to have to try and pick one of these up for myself. But before we get into that, I just want to tell you, I'm as nervous about these picks tonight as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. All right. Now, tell me, just quickly, Eric, I would like to know, are you familiar with Rogue mostly from the 90s cartoon or the movies or the comic books? What are you most familiar with Rogue from?
The version that I'm most familiar with and is sort of like the definitive version of Rogue for me is from the 90s cartoon. That to me is Rogue. It's kind of funny because this image I'm kind of looking at, like, who is this person? You know what I mean? It kind of looks like a generic, you know, a generic woman, you know what I mean? That looks like she's getting ready to work out, you know, like in the 80s or something like that.
Well, that's very appropriate because this card is from 1987.
That's what it looks like to me. You know, it's definitely very 80s. There's no doubt about that. But I'll be honest, I don't think I'm sure I've seen it in passing, but I'm not really familiar what would probably be Rogue's first look. You know what I mean? What her first costume was in the comic books. I'm sure I've seen it, but I'm definitely not very familiar with it.
Well, the thing about Rogue's early costumes is she was a lot of times this is kind of what she would wear is a version of this. She always had all of her skin covered basically because of her mutant ability, right? But there are technically two stickers that predate this, but I couldn't find any like physical picture examples of them. Like I said, I didn't even know this one existed. There are a lot of Rogue trading cards. There are a lot of Rogue stickers. We're going to be focusing on tonight. We're going to be talking, obviously, this.
I'm going to call it first appearance because it's the first card I can find an image for. The other two are actually stickers I can't find images for. So we're gonna for our purposes, call this her first appearance. We're going to be doing something different tonight. We'll be talking about key appearances because people that collect comic books, they collect, you know, key comic books. So I've decided to call some of these other things like key appearances. And then the last one will actually be my pick. But this is the first one for this evening. This is from 1987. This is Comic Images. This is Marvel Universe 1. This is card number 13. This is Rogue, possibly her first appearance. What's interesting about this is whenever I do these picks, I like to keep them at $20 or under. What's interesting about this card is this card by itself, most of the examples I could find on eBay, $18 and up.
Really?
Yeah, this is probably one of the more expensive cards that we've actually talked about here on the show in a raw form. I did not see any slabbed versions. There probably are slab versions that exist out there in the world. I couldn't find any examples. I did do some hasty research for this. I did not have as much time to dedicate to this as I would have liked because I've been really busy. But what do you think about that? $18 for this card, Eric?
Well, it's funny because we've talked about, quite frankly, much more attractive cards with much better artwork that you've basically told me are going for like $2 or $3. So that's kind of my initial reaction to that. I do understand the popularity of the character, though. I mean, Rogue is a very popular character. I do think a lot of people feel that she was done wrong after a great lead up in, you know, X-Men 1 and 2. I do think a lot of people feel that the Anna Paquin version kind of did her wrong in X-Men 3. But before that, people, I think, were really digging Anna Paquin's version of Rogue. And for some people, I'm sure that is their definitive Rogue. You know what I mean? So it's kind of interesting in that regard, but definitely for me, I love that that 90s cartoon look.
Yeah, I love that look too. But for those of you who are into the character, who are looking to collect the character from a speculation standpoint, potentially this is going to be the one that you need to be looking for. This 1987 Comic Images Marvel Universe card number 13, Rogue, which is either her first appearance, maybe third appearance, but definitely this is going to be the one you need to be keeping an eye out for. And, you know, we know the X-Men are coming to the MCU. It's just a question of when. So let's go ahead. I'm going to go actually to the next pick. This will be the first of our key appearances. So this card is from 1990. This, of course, is the Impel trading card line that we have been talking about so much here on the show. This is Rogue's card. We're going to call this her a key appearance. I know some people were, you know, counting some of these cards as rookie cards, but there are a lot of Rogue cards in ahead of this one. I had no idea there had been so many Rogue cards and actually stickers. And the Marvel Universe, the comic images, that card that I showed before, that actually has the biographical information on the back of it. I didn't even know that trading card line existed. But this is going to be, we're going to call it a key appearance. This is a key appearance. This is definitely an important card to collect if you're a fan of Rogue. If you notice, Eric, she's wearing the same outfit. What do you think?
Yeah, but this is definitely a much more recognizable Rogue for me because of the hair. You know, the hair really does it for you, right? That was even a big deal, I think, in the film version, the live action version that I was talking about earlier with the Anna Paquin version. So this definitely looks a lot more like Rogue. I personally, I'm not as into that sort of black leotard look. You know, again, it does kind of. She does kind of look like she's getting ready to work out, you know, in the 80s. You know, that's that look. I mean, that's what that look is. But far more recognizable. And of course, I am aware, mostly from this show and mostly from Dave and also some of our viewers that have commented on the previous videos, because I've actually learned quite a bit from people commenting on the videos, especially the ones where we were talking specifically about the whole, you know, Marvel Impel movement, if you will, and what's happened with these cards. I know that there's a lot of buzz on these things. If it's Marvel Impel, there's people that are interested in these cards.
For sure. And this yellow thing you see waving around, these are my notes and my newly ink stained fingers. but anyhow, so this is a key appearance. We're going to go ahead and go to the next one. We have multiple key appearances tonight because there's so many great rogue cards, and I didn't want to like leave any of them out. And I thought it'd be fun to just focus on one character for this evening.
I'm curious. Card, did you see any prices on this one?
I did. I was just about to get to that. This card you could have for $3 and up in a raw form. There's probably some slabbed ones out there, but I didn't see any, but I didn't get a chance to search for PSA graded. But this particular card, again, in a raw form, $3 and up.
Wow.
So let's go ahead and go to our next pick. It's going to be this one. This is another key appearance in my mind. This is from 1991. This is also an Impel card. This is Marvel Universe. This is card number 42. This is Rogue. This card art in particular is by the great Arthur Adams. Arthur Adams did some of the most like key X-Men comic book cover like art. A lot of people might be familiar with his work if they collected the classic X-Men line, where they reprinted a lot of the early comic book X-Men stories. Well, are you familiar with Arthur Adams' work at all, Eric?
No, not by name. I imagine I've seen some of his work, but I can't associate the name with specific images or anything like that.
Well, he was the cover artist for I think it's X-Men Classic X-Men or X-Men Classics. I forget the actual title. But he did a lot of really, really great, amazing X-Men art, really iconic images. The cover art actually for X-Men Classics or Classic X-Men, whichever it is, number one, they made into a poster. It's just really, really iconic, great looking stuff. I'm a huge Arthur Adams fan, and I've always loved this particular card. So I thought it'd be fun to kind of single it out as a key appearance card. Now, this one, what do you think you could get this card for, Eric, in a raw form?
I don't know. I mean, it definitely feels like we're kind of building up because I love this image. This image is awesome. I mean, I've always liked the Sentinels. I've always wished that they actually used them more, specifically in the movies, and had more of that classic look that you see here, because I've always thought those were really, really cool enemies for the X-Men.
Right.
But this image of Rogue, I really dig it. This is a pretty hot, sexy image of her. And I like the sort of the way that the way that the costume seems to have evolved too.
Right.
Where now it looks more like a costume and less of just her going to the gym in the 80s. You know, this looks like an actual cool costume. So definitely looks like Rogue. Definitely recognizable. Even though this is not the signature look to me of her. Awesome looking card and awesome artwork. I would think that it would have, you know, a pretty high value, but that's not always the case, right? It's not always the artwork that makes the value, right?
Right. That's true. Again, our first appearance was $18. Our first key appearance card was $3. This card can be had in a raw format for basically $2 and up.
Wow. It just goes to show you, you know, card. People collect for all sorts of weird reasons sometimes, you know?
True, very true.
Everybody's motivated by different things. Like we talk about that, the different motivations, you know, for collecting on this show. You know, some people, it's very speculative. They're really looking for that quick flip that they think that they can do in a relatively small amount of time. And they're pushing the hype machine of that particular card for whatever reason. Whether it's the Marvel bump or whatever else is going on in the market at the time. And then, of course, you have those different items that have held value for a really long time, where people are really looking at it as an investment, and they really do plan to hold on to those things. They don't plan to sell them anytime soon. They're hoping to, quote unquote, give it to their kids, you know, that kind of thing. And then there's just the matter of the stuff that you like, right? That's which is probably right. The main reason that most people collect. It doesn't have anything to do with investing at all. It's because they enjoy it. And of the cards you've shown so far, Dave, this is the one that I'm enjoying the most, and it has the least value, at least monetarily.
Right. And that's what's interesting. That's what's interesting about this. Now, and I'd shown this before. I'll show it again here. These cards are all, not the first appearance, the other ones, are coming out of my personal collection. And I have my Impel Marvel cards in this vintage Marvel binder.
I love that binder. That binder is so awesome.
I think it's really cool. And then, of course, I have all my Rogue, my Rogue trading cards. And that's kind of what we're going through, because I'm a huge Rogue fan and I'm excited, hopefully, for her to appear in the movie. And we're hoping that she'll be done right, because we now have, you know, Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel, for Rogue to grab a hold of and suck the powers right out of her. All right. And then use them for her own means, right? Because that's where Rogue's, I don't know if people realize this, but that's in the classic version of the X-Men, that's where Rogue's abilities that people really liked that she had, her superhuman ability, her ability to fight, her invulnerability, the things that made her like a basically a female Superman, for lack of a better way to describe it, all those powers came from Carol Danvers. That's where she got them.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
All right, so here we go. This and what's interesting, I didn't pick a single Jim Lee card for this evening. And there's kind of a reason why, but we'll get into that when we get to the end. All right, so, all right, here we go. This is from 1992. This is another Impel card. I love those Impel cards. This is Marvel Universe. This is Wave 3. This is card number 64. This is Rogue. This is going to be the last of our key appearances for this evening. This artwork is by the great Mark Silvestri, great X-Men artist Mark Silvestri. A lot of people would know him more for things like Witchblade that he created over at Top Cow. He's one of the Image Comics founders. I mean, I'm a huge Mark Silvestri fan. I have always loved this card. This card is absolutely fantastic. It's one of my favorite cards in my collection. This is, in my mind anyway, a classic image of Rogue. What do you think about this card, Eric?
Well, this to me is like the definitive look of Rogue. It's the one that matches the animated series that I was talking about earlier. This is what I think of when I think of Rogue, as I think of her looking like this. So I would imagine that this is a sought after card, but am I going to be shocked, Dave, or what, in terms of what people are paying for this right now?
Yeah, unfortunately, you're in for a shock. Okay, so again, like we said, first appearance, that card, relatively rare, $18 and up. Hard to find as far as I could tell, but there's quite a few on eBay if you want to try and get that first appearance card. Again, that's for the speculators. The key appearances in the pick, these are for the collectors. These are for the people who collected for the art. The first key appearance from 1990, $3. The one from 1991, $2. And now they're at 1992. This card can be had in its raw form for $1 and up.
Wow. Wow. You know, I guess it really also says something about whether you've had an appearance in the MCU yet or not, right? Or if you have an anticipated appearance in the MCU, because we do talk about the Marvel bump. And even when they just announce a show, it seems like obviously that makes the value go up. But man, this is so iconic to me. I mean, I feel like anybody who grew up in that time period, or even, you know, I don't think, how old was I when they first came out? I can't remember. But I mean, I wasn't like a little kid, you know, when the 90s cartoon came out. But boy, did I like it, you know, and I thought it was really well done. And, you know, I can remember when the director for the X-Men live action films, when he was talking about, you know, his research that he did for the X-Men movies. And, you know, he talked, this is at San Diego Comic-Con, he talked about the fact that he had watched the 90s cartoon, and everybody was like cheering, because it's like, okay, well, then you're gonna get it. Then you're going to understand the characters. You know, you don't even have to read the comics at that point. That was how the hardcore fans at San Diego Comic-Con felt, you know, about it. So, you know, to me, that's what this is. You know, that's what this image evokes in me. And the fact that it's just really strange to me that it's not a more coveted card.
It's interesting, and you know, and it's important to remember too that we might be a little ahead of the curve with what we're doing here in Collector's Corner, because there's not really a lot of channels that are really talking about trading cards in relation to the MCU bump. Most people are focusing on the comic books, you know, and the Impel stuff is still being sought after, and there's a lot of people that are diehard and love it, but I wouldn't say it's cooled off necessarily, but some of that excitement has maybe dissipated a little bit. But I'm personally loving and enjoying talking about these trading cards in relation to these characters, because if you've been priced out of the comics and you want to collect something that involves these characters and have some key appearances, have some first appearances, for example, you can still get these trading cards and get them slabbed and graded and still have them as a part of your collection. Again, they don't take up as much room. They're really fun to show off. Artwork like this is really dynamic and great, again, by the great Mark Silvestri. So I love talking about this in relation to the MCU bump, because I'd be curious to see as we move forward if these cards actually experience an MCU bump or not. But this is, again, this is the last of our key appearances for this evening. So the last card is my pick. This is one of the most beautiful cards that I have in my collection. It's one of my favorites. This is from 1994. This is Fleer Marvel Masterpieces. This is by the Hildebrand Brothers. This is card number 101. This is Rogue. This is the gold foil signature series. You can't really tell here on the scan, but the Marvel logo, her name, and the signatures across it are in gold. This is a gold signature series card. This is, in my mind, one of the most beautiful Rogue cards ever created. I love the artwork on this card. What do you think about this one, Eric?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is awesome. I love this kind of style. This is what I would call more of sort of like that photorealistic kind of style. And I've always said that I enjoy that. I'm a man of extremes. You know, I like Alex Ross and I like Bruce Timm. Those are my two favorite comic book artists. So super cartoony, super photorealistic. That's what I like the most. And that's what this evokes for me. It's very much like a photorealistic type of image. And you feel like she's real. You know what I mean? Just looking at this. And I've never seen this image before. I've never seen this card before. It looks like, in my mind, what Rogue would look like in real life, you know, if you met her, you know, if she was a living, breathing person. So that's pretty, pretty cool. I did want to acknowledge that Hollywood Jackson's in the house, and he's saying hi, and we want to say hi back to you, Hollywood. We appreciate you being out here. And anybody else out there in the Rogues Gallery, if you want to make some comments, you know, pros or cons or whatever, you know, let us know. Let us know what you think about. I know there's a lot of people out there that are familiar with this character, because Rogue has always been very popular. So.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've been trying to do with the show as we've been moving forward is to pick things that will spark a little bit of conversation, a little bit of debate. And one of the things I found most interesting about the Rogue cards is, as popular as the character is, her first appearance card, fairly valuable. And then as you go through, as the card art gets better, the price is decreased, which is a weird, weird thing, right? Now, this will be the test, Eric. What do you think this card goes for?
Well, I'm not very familiar with these gold foil, like, signature series type cards. Now, my understanding, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, is that these cards were always meant to be sort of rare collectibles. In other words, the series run is much more limited than the other cards. They're on obviously a different material. They just were not produced in the same quantity as the other standard cards. And they're kind of like that, you know, they're meant to be a collectible from the outset. They're meant to be rare and somewhat valuable from the outset. But I'm not that familiar with this stuff. I've never owned any of these foil cards. I never remember any particular series that I was collecting as a kid that had this kind of stuff.
Right. So I'm going to put myself center camera here for just a second. If I can get it to work. Oh, it's not working. What am I doing? Here we go. I got it. My bad. Sorry. All right. So can you see that? I'm trying to hold it in the light. Can you see the gold on it?
Yeah, I could see it for a second. It is hard to see. The more you put it to the side, the more obvious it is. Because you can kind of see that
signatures
and
gold.
See that reflection, yeah, on the signatures. Yeah.
So it does have these gold embellishments on it. It's kind of hard to see here in the can. I need to really fix my studio lighting.
By the way, I will say, I mean, the even though we're getting glare and stuff, if you can kind of put it up, you can see how the card really pops. Much more so than the image that we had up earlier. Like, the card really does pop because of that sort of glossy finish and everything like that.
Yeah, this is a beautiful card. I have these Hildebrand Brothers cards. Like I said, you don't really see many people really talking about them in relation to the trading cards. And if I was gonna own, just like we did with Loki last week, just like we did with Iron Fist, just like with Namor the Submariner, if we're gonna be talking about these popular Marvel characters that are coming to the MCU, rumored to be coming to the MCU, or we believe are coming to the MCU, if you want to collect trading cards, these in my mind are some of the most, you know, the best cards to get. You get that first appearance Rogue card for $18. You get this here, the Hildebrandt Brothers card. I would try to get the gold signature series because it is a little bit more limited. There's another painted version of this that's in the main line that isn't the gold signature series, that's not as rare. But I would recommend actually picking up this particular card, and that's going right back in my
thing. It's really funny to me. You know, I do think in some ways, obviously, the acquisition of Fox might have taken the folks at Marvel Studios, you know, they might have been taken aback by it a little bit and not totally prepared for it, because you would totally think that this character would already be in the MCU. You know, it's funny because there is controversy about gender flipping with a lot of the major characters. In fact, I haven't been watching Loki, and I've heard criticisms there of, you know, this, you know, and I'm sorry if I'm giving you a spoiler, but I haven't watched it. Okay. And I know about this. All right. I know that there's a female version of Loki. Okay. And I don't watch the show. Okay. And that's very specific. I've decided not to. But I think it's funny because that decision and that whole approach has become very controversial, right? And yet this is a no-brainer, right? This is a very popular, strong female character, and we have yet to see her in the MCU. And you have to scratch your head a little bit on that, because there is no controversy putting Storm in. There is no controversy putting Rogue in. These are established, you know, strong female characters. In fact, that's why, in a lot of ways, I was kind of giving the MCU a little bit of the benefit of the doubt what they were doing, because I knew a lot of their best female characters were tied up in the X-Men rights. I knew that, right? Some of the most popular, iconic female characters are associated with the X-Men, and they were under Fox. That's not a problem anymore. So it's really strange to me that they haven't rectified that, because you have this awesome character just sitting there with a huge fan base of men and women alike, boys and girls alike, and they're just sitting on it. It's crazy.
Rogue, a proper adaptation of Rogue, in my humble opinion, as beloved as this character is amongst the fans, and once the new fans get a real chance to really become, you know, acquainted with Rogue, a proper Rogue, you know, the one who has the super strength, who can fly, who has the Southern accent, you know,
alongside a proper sass. Gambit, by the way,
yeah,
alongside a proper Gambit, bring that nostalgia back of the 90s cartoon and that whole situation that everybody's very familiar with that grew up on that and wants to see, and girls would love it. I know that, you know, so it's like, it's a no brainer, and it's never happened. You know,
I mean,
it's just so strange. And couple that with the disappointment of the Anna Paquin Rogue, which people loved in the first two movies, I think, because she was very much embraced.
Yeah.
And then they kind of ruined her in the third movie. So she's a character begging to come back, totally fits with their little agenda, right? And it just hasn't happened.
And the thing I love about Rogue, too, and Gambit, since you bring Gambit up, too, is Rogue is a character I think could break big, you know, in the way that Harley Quinn has broke big. And right. I could literally see already an action adventure romantic comedy, you know, outside of the X-Men, that's just Rogue and Gambit on an adventure, and it takes the whole will they or won't they to a whole new dimension, because if she puts her hands on him too long, she's gonna kill him.
You know, it's funny, you just gave these people an incredible pitch. You know what I mean? You just gave Disney this incredible pitch, and you know, they probably won't even take it. You know, free advice like that, you know, and they still won't take it. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
But literally, to me, that would be an awesome pitch if you could actually get in, you know, into Disney and actually do that. I mean, I think that would be a fantastic pitch to give them.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that's going to happen. But back to the task at hand, now that we've somehow lost three people who are just watching. Back to the task at hand. All right, so we'll get into the pop culture news here in just a second. So what do you think this card goes for, Eric? This is a this like is I a said,
I wouldn't even attempt to speculate on something like that because I am not familiar with these gold foil things at all. It's my understanding they're meant to be collectibles from the outset, and they have a limited print run. But I could be wrong.
$4 in a raw form. Again, $4 and up. So there are cards that are $4. There's some people selling them for $5, $6, $9. It depends upon who you get it from, right? Just like with all things. But you know, I saw listings for this card for basically, you know, $4. I think it's worth every single penny. If I was going to own two rogue cards, the ones I would own the first appearance, 1987 Comic Images 1, card number 13. And I would own the 1994 Fleer Marvel Masterpieces 101.
I just think it's so amazing when you contrast those two images and how poor the other earlier appearance is in my mind. And yet it's so, gosh, I hate to use the term overvalued because I feel like you shouldn't use that term when you're talking about collectibles. I feel like I'm going to get myself in trouble. And it's not what I believe either. It's not the word I really want to say, right? It's not that it's overvalued. It's just that I find it really, really shocking that people are willing to pay so much for that when this card is of such a better quality. But at the same time, it does give you a little bit of a lesson in that sort of forced scarcity, if you will. That phenomenon where basically a company will say, well, this is a collector's item. Like it literally says that on the cover. I have books like that, you know,
right,
first appearance,
right.
This is a collector's item, you know, well, yeah, you're saying it is, but that doesn't mean it's actually going to be a collector's item. The market will determine that, right? Not a company just saying that this is a collector's item. And this is a good example of that, right? This is a good example of a company coming up with a concept, and I'm sure they weren't the first to come up with it, but the trading card companies basically came up with this idea. We're going to have these foil cards, right? And they're going to be really coveted, and they're going to go up in value, and everybody's going to want these, and they're going to use them as investments, and it's $4. You know what I mean?
Right. It's right. It's
$30 years later, and it's $4. So this is a good example of that forced scarcity that companies sometimes do and how it backfires because the market and the fandom ends up not supporting it. Now, we do have a comment from Chris Roberts. He says, really wish I never sold those masterpiece sets. Had them completed with all of the rare inset sets. You're familiar with that, Dave?
Yeah, I am. I actually have. I've got quite a few of the gold foil signature series. This is not the last time we will be seeing gold foil signature series cards actually here on the show as we continue to work our way through the MCU. And in addition to that too, I actually have quite a few of the inset cards actually for the original Marvel Masterpieces as well, the actual Joe Jusco. As a matter of fact, I actually have the Wolverine versus Sabretooth one from that line. So yeah, inset. We know what you mean, Chris.
I think we know what you meant, Chris. So, and I think most people would understand that as well. So,
I have, I've got quite a few of those. So we will be definitely be talking about those. I've got, this will probably be the last time we talk about Rogue and this extensiveness focusing on the character. But I have some other actually fairly limited cards for Rogue besides this one. But this, like I said, you know, when I come to the cards that are my picks now moving forward, it's the best of the best, in my opinion. And this, to me, this is the best Rogue card that you can own.
Yeah, that's an awesome image of Rogue. I mean, if you're a fan of the character, that would be something really cool to pick up. And as you mentioned, the nice thing about the trading cards is, like, you know, if you're collecting comics, even like I don't have a huge comic collection, but it ends up taking up a lot of space, especially when you start bagging and boarding the books. You know, it takes up a lot of space. You end up with those big long board, you know, those long boxes. And it's crazy how much space that stuff can end up taking. So something like this is something where you can have a really cool image and it doesn't take up a whole lot of space. Right. And that is an awesome thing to be able to have.
And I'm surprised more collectors aren't flocking to the trading cards too, just because there's a lot of people that they buy the comics just for the cover images alone. And when you look at artwork like this, it's like I'm surprised that we don't see cards like this going up in value more, because this is essentially the same thing as those variant covers. You know, but I don't know. I never know why sometimes certain things take off and other things don't. So,
well, you know, the market will do what the market does. Like I said, if the fandom doesn't respond and they just don't decide they don't want that card, they just don't want that card, you know, and that's what happens. You know, that's why you can't, it's always hard to predict these kinds of things, because this is something that was obviously meant to be a premium collectible, and ultimately it's not.
Very true. All right, are we good to go into pop culture?
I wanted to talk a little bit about a pickup that I did and talk
Kenner Marvel Legends. That. I keep doing that.
There's stuff in there, Dave, but you know, it is what it is.
Well, I was curious to see what you got. I'm sorry. In my mind, I'm like, look at the clock and I'm like, I've just run us long. We're at 36 minutes and I've gone on and on about these cards, which was not my intention, but yeah, tell us about your pickup. I'm curious to see what you got.
Do have another comment from Chris to finish up this segment though. It says, yeah, those cards sets don't take up space when you have a couple, but when you complete 30 or 40 sets, it's another story. And I totally understand that, Chris. I totally understand that. The one thing that I used to try to go for is, like, I would try to get, you know, basically every card in the series. You know, like I've talked about it many times about the Star Trek, like, 25th anniversary cards that I have. And I have even the special binder that you had to mail order for and all that kind of stuff. That was my goal. I bought a box and then I wanted to have like one complete set of them. But I ended up with extras, you know what I mean? But that was sort of my goal. And then I was just like, I'm good. I ended up with duplicates anyway. Right. But I still was like, I'm good. That's all I needed. And it doesn't, in that case, it doesn't take up a whole lot of space. Right. If you do have a lot of boxes, right? If you have like a lot of sealed boxes of cards and things like that, yeah, that can take up a ton of space. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It can take up a ton of space. And if you are one of those people that's really into having, you know, like a ton of duplicates of a certain card, for whatever reason, whether you like it or you think it's a good investment or it is something that you're speculating on, yeah, that can take up a ton of space, no doubt about it.
Very cool. All right. So yeah, let's see what you picked up. I'm curious.
So I have been talking a lot about what I call the Kenner Marvel Legends. A lot of other people call it the retro Kenner Marvel, or sorry, the retro Marvel Legends. It's so weird because even Hasbro, if you go to their official site, like if you go to HasLab right now and you look up Marvel Retro, they have two different series, and the way they call them is they have the Hasbro Marvel Legends Retro Series. That's the stuff that I'm talking about, what I call the Kenner Marvel Legends. And then they have another series that they call the Marvel Legends Retro. And I'm going to share this just really quick before I get to my pick, because I want people to understand what it is I'm talking about here and how sometimes this stuff, in terms of the marketing, it gets really, really frustrating, because it's like, how do I even know if people know what I'm talking about? So this is the Hasbro Pulse site, right? You can't get much more official than this. And you can see the stuff that I'm talking about. This is the Kenner stuff. They call it Hasbro Marvel Legends Retro, you know, 3 3 and 75, you know, inch figures, right? And then they have another one, completely different line, different characters and everything. And they call that the Marvel Legends Retro line. And a huge different price point. As you can see, one of these figures, these much more articulated figures, they go for about $20, whereas you can get two for $20 of the figures that I'm talking about, the what I call the Kenner Marvel Legends figures. They're totally different things. And I wish that Hasbro would actually market this a little bit better. But in terms of what I have for you today, I do like to do a little bit of show and tell when I pick something up. I finally found one of the Wave 3 figures in the wild, and this is the Gray Hulk. And I said that this was a no-brainer because obviously in one of the previous waves, they already had the Hulk. I do own that. I've shown that in a previous episode. But this is the Gray Hulk. I do think it's a very good-looking figure. You know, as I've mentioned, I really do like the artwork on these Kenner Marvel Legends figures. And I like the price point because you can pick this up at Target. And that's where I found it, at Target for $9.99. And I also found something interesting because we have talked about sort of the mystery of the empty pegs, right? We're not the only people talking about that. Junkman's talked about it. Retro Blasting's talked about it. Spectre Creative has gone to great lengths to try to explain it, you know, with his insight, you know, from his time in the industry. Here's something that's funny that happened to me with this figure. So I always, when I go to Target, I always go straight to the action figure area and I look to see if they have any of these figures, because I heard that Wave 3 is around. Multiple sources told me that live in a different state than I do. I live in Arizona, and they were even calling me out in the comments and saying, "Hey man, this stuff is in stores." Like, well, I haven't seen it. This is the first time I found a Wave 3 figure in the store. It was not on the peg. Somebody had taken it and put it into a different section of the toy aisle. And that particular day, I decided to just kind of look up and down all the different aisles at the different toys. And it was like stuck at an end cap, almost as if somebody was trying to hide it, which I remember trying to do stuff like that when I was a kid. If there was a figure that I wanted, I would try to put him in the back of all the other figures. I remember doing that as a little kid in the hopes that next time when I came and I had some money or my parents were willing to buy me the figure, it would still be there. That strategy never worked, by the way. So that never worked. But I found it interesting because that figure was off the peg. It was in a different section. And then there was another of this figure, and it was in the Funko section where they have all the collectible toys, like the Super 7 stuff, the stuff that is meant for the adult collector, right? Because this thing,
right.
Okay, these are still marketed towards kids. This is in the regular action figure aisle. That's where it's supposed to be, as opposed to like the Funko area where all the collectible stuff is, that is basically marketed towards, you know, like the reaction. This was actually sitting there with a Transformer Reactions figure in that section, okay? If you notice, Reaction's not a toy. I mean, there's actually a disclaimer on the Reaction figures that says this is not a toy. It's a collectible, right? Yeah, the other one that they had at the store was sitting over there. So a little, I'm sure other people have run into this, but consider that maybe one of the reasons you're not finding this stuff is because people are hiding it. they're putting it in the wrong place, you know? I don't think the store did that. I don't think this was a case of like the store put it on the wrong, you know, put it on the wrong peg or something like that. I think also sometimes people walk around with these things in the store, and they decide, I don't think so. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it's kind of a funny phenomenon. And I appreciate that, Chris. It says awesome find. I thought it was an awesome find. This is the first time, again, that I found a Wave 3. And incidentally, I'd mentioned on a previous episode, one of the only figures I was missing from the other two waves was Black Panther. And then I found one Black Panther by itself. This time I found another Black Panther at the store. So it is interesting, the random stuff that you find. And this is within that 8-week window. We've been talking about that 8-week window, and I actually had receipts to kind of prove it. Now I'm finding out this doesn't seem to be true. It's kind of weird. So, because this was definitely within that 8-week window. It hasn't been 8 weeks since the last time, you know, I went in there and saw a bunch of Marvel Legends figures. This one just popped up. And then there was a Black Panther, and there was another one of these. So there is something weird going on. You know, it isn't strictly that 8-week window that we've been talking about. There is something weird that's going on, whether they have these things in the back room, or they're putting them in the wrong place, or customers are doing that. You know, customers are taking these things and putting them in the wrong place so you can't find them, because that was my experience. That was literally my experience, was I found this figure, this gray Hulk, Wave 3, I found him sitting there on an end cap with other toys that were not related to this. And I know exactly where they're supposed to be, by the way. They have a little Marvel section. You know, anybody who's been to Target knows that. They have like a little section with all the other Marvel Legends stuff. And you know exactly where to go, right? You know exactly where to go. And it even says, you know, it's got the little tag on there. And you know exactly that they're supposed to go here, because you can read it. And it's just funny to see that and see like another figure that was put in the wrong area with the, you know, the adult collectibles and things like that. So that phenomenon does definitely happen. There's no doubt about that. That does happen. I experienced it, so I know it does happen. And I did want to kind of give a little bit of a shout out because I found out about another channel that I thought was really interesting. It's called Go Figure. Apparently, he is a collector in Canada. And I found him because recently he did an interview with Retro Blasting. And I thought what they were discussing was really interesting because Go Figure basically is one of those people that has decided he is not going to collect new stuff anymore. That basically he got to a point, and you can go to his channel and you can watch his interview. He explains why he doesn't collect new toys anymore. He had a very good rationale about it. And he talked about something that I thought was really interesting, and I wanted to mention to Dave and see his reaction on it. And he talked about basically the three lies of the sort of modern action figure collectible movement. And the three lies he talked about, and I'll try to get them right, and I'm paraphrasing them, and in no particular order, I guess. One, he talked about price, that basically the modern companies are promising you that, hey, we're going to be able to deliver something for you that's cheaper than the vintage stuff, because the vintage stuff just seems to keep going up, right? The vintage stuff just always constantly seems to be going up, 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 up. So that's one of the false promises he says that they have. Another one that he said that's interesting is availability, like the promise that basically because you can't find, quote unquote, cannot find the vintage stuff. So by making this stuff new, you're actually going to be able to find it in a store, right? That you're actually going to be able to find it. And then, of course, the last one, and I hope I didn't mess this up because I am remembering from the top of my head, but I believe the last one was quality, that this stuff is actually going to be better quality than, you know, that old stuff. And he basically talked about them being the three lies. And I think in a lot of ways that's true. You know, like for instance, where this thing was at, you know, not this particular figure, but another one, it was with the reaction figures. And the reaction figures do say they're not even toys, right? You know, and they're expensive. You know what I mean? They're like $15 or something like that. They're not they're not even as cheap as, say, you know, a Star Wars figure or these figures even, you know, which are not vintage, but I just find that interesting. But that's one of the reasons that I advocate for this, because I do think there is greater availability for this toy. It's a better price point. It's got a lot of those things going for it that so many of the other lines promise you. But I'm curious what you think about that, Dave, as far as this argument of vintage versus modern versus new.
Well, I currently don't collect anything that's repackaged as vintage, you know, like something that, like, I don't have any of the vintage Star Wars stuff. I remember watching, actually talking about Retro Blasting. I remember watching one of his episodes where he was talking about the retro, the Kenner vintage line, and had his own opinions about it and whatever. And while it looked interesting and seemed interesting to me from an outside standpoint, I mean, I had all those action figures when I was a kid, but for me, it just didn't appeal to me just in general. And you know, for me, I guess it's interesting because the vintage, or the I guess how we put this, the retro sci-fi toys that came out that I really wanted to get, I missed. Diamond, I think it was Diamond Select or whatever they call it, the basic Diamond Comics distributors, they have a toy line, right, where they occasionally will do stuff. They did a lot of Star Trek stuff back in the day. Right. Probably familiar with that, Eric.
Yeah, I am.
They actually did for Disney's The Black Hole. They actually released the robots, Vincent, Old Bob, and Maximilian.
I've actually seen some reviews of those figures.
I really wanted to pick those up. But at the time at which they came out was when the pandemic was kind of first hitting. And I just couldn't, in my mind, rationalize going out. You know, we're supposed to be staying in to try and buy a couple of toys from the old Disney movie, you know, and by the time I finally got around to it, you know, now they're on eBay and they're, you know, more expensive. And then I just gave up. It was like, by the time I was looking for them, they were on eBay and they were super expensive. And I was like, well, just forget it then. And to be honest with you, that's been my attitude about a lot of this stuff lately. It's just, well, forget it. I think there's only been a few things that has kind of piqued my interest. The the Marvel Kenner line that you're talking about there piques my interest a lot. And I'm a big Ant-Man fan, you know, the Ant-Man figure, you know, I kind of go, well, I should maybe just go looking for that. But the fact that you're saying that they're scarce and they're hard to find, you know, now, as far as the Three Lies goes, I think that there might be a little bit of truth to that, because the only part of that I would question is the idea that they're not as expensive. It depends upon what you get. We talked about the Silverhawks line, although we didn't really feature it on the show because we both had the same reaction. Geez, those things are expensive.
And they talked about the Silverhawks line in this particular interview, by the way, as well, which I thought was interesting.
And while they look great, I just don't want to pay $50 for a figure I'm just going to sit around somewhere. I'm debating right now about a couple of different things I kind of want to get, but I don't really have room for them. But, you know, they're kind of more affordable. I'm interested in, you know, McFarlane's been talking about they're doing the new Spawn toys, right? That are going to be coming out. You know, those have kind of my interest. I'm kind of going, well, maybe, you know, but those are only going to be like $25, you know, each or something. But as far as the Star Wars retro stuff, for example, the vintage line, I don't even know what those go for. We're talking about the classic Star Wars one. They got the classic packaging and everything and all that. I don't even know what those go for.
Well, it's confusing too. Like I was talking about the confusion between these different Marvel Legend lines, because they use the retro in two different lines that are completely different. You know, one has a lot more articulation, is twice the price. It's not what I'm talking about here. It's completely different. But that is Marvel Legends retro. They do the same thing. It's kind of confusing in Star Wars, right? Because the vintage line are essentially, you know, figures that generally are inspired by the original trilogy, but they have more articulation. They're like a higher price point than the basic figures used to be. There's the retro line, where the retro line is the old school figures, or in the case of the Mandalorian figures, which I actually unboxed, you know, on a previous episode, the ones that I had got, they're new figures, but they're in that old, you know, that old quote unquote retro Kenner styling. Hasbro has a weird marketing problem here. I mean, clearly they're really kind of confusing, I think, a lot of people, especially casual collectors who aren't sitting here devoting, you know, half of their lives to this stuff, which, you know, some people do, right? They're incredibly serious about their collecting. The average collector is not like that, right? The average collector might be like, hey, I remember that, that Empire Han figure that was so cool. Like my brother had one. I think he still has his. I always thought that was really cool. They came out with that one, in the retro collection. So basically they're like reissuing the figure, right? That's basically what that retro collection is. But then it gets confusing when Mandalorian comes along and they decide not to do Return of the Jedi. They're going to do Mandalorian instead. And those are all new figures. Those are all new figures, except they happen to be in the style of those classic Kenner figures. So it can get incredibly confusing, you know, and you know, for instance, when I say vintage, what I mean, right, is those late 70s, early 80s, you know, all the way up until droids and Ewoks, which, by the way, I've talked to people about that. Like, where do you cut it off? I would say droids and Ewoks is part of that vintage, you know, Kenner stuff. But now Hasbro is using that term to market new product. And it gets incredibly confusing as a collector, I think, especially also if you haven't been following all this stuff as it's happening. Like you happen to see that figure in the store, you're probably going to get very confused, because the vintage line, yeah, they, as far as I know, they have the Han in the parka from Empire, but it's a completely different figure. It's much more articulated. You know what I mean? It's not the same thing as that classic Kenner figure that you remember, you know, from childhood. It's a different figure, you know, but then they do have the one that's basically the exact same thing as, you know, from your childhood, except maybe like a different plastic or something. I've heard different reviews where people talk about that, like they don't quite feel the same, they look the same, but they don't quite feel the same. And I don't have any examples. You know, all I do have my Mandalorian figures, but I haven't taken any of them out of the package. So, you know, it's kind of weird. And Hasbro's doing some weird things when it comes to the marketing of these products.
Well, it's interesting. And I had forgotten about that. I had forgotten that the difference is the vintage ones are actually more articulated. And then the retro lines are the ones that are theoretically more like the ones that we had as a child, you know, the same packaging, same style of figure, the whole thing.
Yeah. The vintage stuff, they do the sort of the quote unquote classic packaging, and it's a marketing gimmick, right? Where basically they have these new figures, you know, many of them based on classic Star Wars figures, but they are a completely new, different mold. And they just happen to, you know, have that kind of classic look to the card back. In fact, I'll share one just because I want to make sure that we're on the same page here. And anybody who's kind of confused, which that you should be confused in this conversation. So like, this is a great example. This is a Star Wars, The Last Jedi Luke figure from the vintage collection. Okay. And you can see it says Kenner, right? You can see that, Dave. It says Kenner on the card back. And it's got that classic, you know, it's got that picture, right? That picture from the movie, right? Because that's the way they marketed them back in the day. You would have a picture of the character from the movie, and they would be right next to the figure, right? That's what the vintage collection is. But this is a completely different, you know, type of figure. You know what I mean? It's not the same style as the original. It's hard to tell because it's all white, but you can see that he has a joint here, right? He's got a joint at the elbow. Well, the actual vintage figures didn't have joints at the elbow. That's the retro collection. You know what I mean? The retro collection is in that style where they only have the 5 points of articulation. It's incredibly confusing.
Well, and for me anyway, you know, something from The Last Jedi, I wouldn't consider vintage anyway, because it's not vintage. This is, in my mind, this is still relatively new, you know.
But this is the vintage collection, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely. Well, there you go. Yeah, I haven't collected a lot of Star Wars toys over the last several years. To be honest, the only thing I've seen recently that really, I mean, there's stuff here and there that piques my interest, but the thing that most had me kind of curious and thinking about doing something was, you know, the Marvel, you know, line that you've been showing here on the show, because I love the box art because it looks like really cool, fun comic book images.
What's nice about this is something that would never came out, but it looks like something that Kenner should have had if they had the license.
Right.
That's why I like this line. That's why I'm advocating for this line, because we never had this. The closest thing we had was this, you know, the Secret Wars collection, right?
Right.
Which were still very different than this. This is actually what they're advertising. This is like if Kenner had the license, you know what I mean, for Marvel action figures, this is what they would have done with it. So I think it's one of those rare cases of the big companies getting it and doing it right, but there's so many darn examples of them getting it wrong. A lot of people aren't willing to give this product a chance.
Interesting. Well, very cool. Little known fact. I actually inked pages from a Hulk family. I think it's Hulk family number one, that actually featured Mr. Fix-It, which was the Gray Hulk, as my tryout at Marvel. And that's what eventually led to my work on X-Men, sort of the Braddocks, like another lifetime ago, it feels like now.
That's cool.
So,
it's very
cool. Every time I see the Gray Hulk, I have a fondness for that, because I was like, oh, Gray Hulk. He helped me get me in at Marvel for like a minute and a half. But at least I was there for a minute and a half, I guess, right? All right, very cool. All right. Well, cool deal. So, do you have anything else that you want to do here on the collector's side, or
no? I think I spoke my piece. So,
Okay. Well, it's interesting. Three Lies is a very interesting concept. I hadn't really heard that vocalized before, but it's all very good points. Especially with that example you gave us. I mean, that Luke Skywalker figure is really confusing to me.
Yeah, Go Figure seems like an interesting channel. I haven't had a chance to check out a lot his other videos, but I know from looking at his channel, just doing a brief overview, he does a lot of vintage like toy reviews. So if you're interested that kind of stuff, if you're into a true vintage, he's a good channel to check out.
All right. Well, very cool. All right, are we good to get into pop culture now?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, very cool. I don't have much for pop culture this evening. We're just going to go right into it since we're over an hour. This is just one thing that but it happened a couple of days ago. I just wanted to talk about it just briefly. So this is from USA Today. This was actually from the 21st. This was written by Bill Cavini. I guess that's correct. Apologies if I'm saying your name incorrectly. But Joanne Linville, Star Trek Romulan commander and Twilight Zone actress, dead at 93. It just says Joanne Linville, who made a memorable Star Trek appearance as a Romulan commander in the original TV series, died Sunday in Los Angeles. She was 93. In a statement to USA Today, her family said Linville lived a full life, one whose spirit, passion for art and life was an inspiration to all who had the pleasure of knowing her, the statement continued, a loving mother and proud grandmother. The actress, born Joanne Linville, Beverly Joanne Linville, apologies, on January 15, 1928 in Bakersfield, California, stood out in an acclaimed 1961 episode of The Twilight Zone. She played a Southern belle in the final days of the Civil War, who learns the cost of war and hatred and one of the classic series' famous twists. And then this is what I know her most for, which is her appearance on Star Trek, the original series. Linville, who studied with Stella Adler, was a frequent TV guest star and film actor from the 1950s through 1980s with roles in more than 100 shows and movies. Among the things she appeared in, they list here, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, Gunsmoke, Dr. Kildare, Ben Casey, Route 66, I Spy, Bonanza, The Fugitive. It's a very, very long list. I just thought it'd be fun to just kind of take a moment, not fun, but I wanted to take a moment and mention her passing because when I think of like classic Star Trek villains in my mind, the Romulan commander from Star Trek, I remember being stunned at that as a kid because we'd seen Mark Leonard, right, who played a Romulan commander in Balance of Terror. But this is interesting because this is a female commander. And I remember being kind of stunned at that as a kid. So I wanted to take a moment and just, kind of celebrate, her life and her career here just briefly here on the show and memorialize her passing. Had you heard about this, Eric?
No, I didn't hear about that until you know, the show prep that we did just before the show started. So I am glad that you brought this to my attention, Dave. I also think this is a classic episode. Actually, this image right here kind of encapsulates what I always found so fascinating, which is this little attraction and almost obsession she had with Spock. I always kind of liked those episodes where they showed, Spock does have game, so
right.
and she filled that role very well, that she was even manipulated by Mr. Spock, because he had a mission to do, and he was willing to literally get dirty to do it, almost like James Bond, right? So it's kind of interesting. It's a great episode if you've never seen it. I think it's probably something I hope that she was very proud of in her career, because I think a lot of people, that's what she's known for.
Yeah, this is one of those, in my mind, classic, Star Trek actor, actors or actresses that if I was at a convention and I saw she was there and signing pictures, I would get in line for a signed autograph because this was such a memorable character in my mind. So I just thought it'd be, worth taking a moment, to just, like I said, memorialize her passing. But again, Joanne Linville, Star Trek Romulan commander and Twilight Zone actress, dead at 93. All right.
Yeah, definitely glad that you brought this to the attention of myself and to the audience. So someone that will hopefully be long remembered.
I think that episode will continue to carry weight with people for, you know, I mean, it already has for decades and decades, but I think it will continue to, because original series, it's withstanding the test of time. Those episodes are still great. It's one of the few things I still rewatch. I can't rewatch Next Gen anymore. Thank you, Picard. But I still love original series. So,
well, as I talked about last week, Playmobil is coming out with a whole series of original Star Trek toys, including this epic, you know, Enterprise. They're not doing Next Gen, at least not yet. So,
right, right.
We'll see.
All right. Do you have anything for pop culture?
Yes. I actually thought this was kind of funny that we didn't come across this last week, being that we do talk a lot about Batman on this channel. And I know you're a huge Batman fan. So this is from...
Yeah, I can't imagine why we talk so much about Batman.
This is from GameSpot.com. And as you can see, the article is dated June 16th, 2021. So we were behind the curve on this one. It says Lego Batman 2 isn't happening due to rights issues. Lego Batman won't be protecting the streets of Gotham again anytime soon. It says DC Comics and Lego have been close for years, and the two brands coming together to create four games and a dozen direct-to-video movies and shows. One of the biggest productions for the two companies, though, was the 2017 Lego Batman movie. We won't be getting a sequel, though, and it comes down to rights, Collider reports. The quote, because Lego has left Warner Brothers and is now over at Universal as of April 2020, something I was not aware of, there probably won't be a Lego Batman sequel, unfortunately. I'm so sorry to say that, but I don't think they'll be making a Lego Batman 2, said Lego Batman movie director Chris McKay. In other words, for the movie to happen, Warner Brothers would have to let Universal make a movie with their most profitable character. And I do not see that happening either. So that's directly from the director of the original Lego Batman, a film that I really enjoyed, that my kids really enjoyed. He really fun version of Batman, in my opinion. The one in the Lego movie as well. I thought that was just brilliant. I thought it was really, really well done. And you know what? It happened because at the time, I guess, you know, Warner Brothers was basically doing all the sort of film and gaming stuff for Lego. You know, that was one of their big properties over at Warner Brothers Games, is those Lego games. They made a lot of different Lego games, which a lot of people like those games as well. I've played several of them with my daughters, and they're a lot of fun. They're unique, fun games. But apparently it looks like Lego Batman 2 is not going to happen. Again, I didn't even know Universal got the Lego rights. Did you know anything about this, Dave?
No, I didn't. And I guess I'm not too surprised at this story. I mean, we talk a lot about, you know, legal rights, you know, causing weird issues with various productions. So this is a story, you know, a tale as old as time, so to speak, which I find weirdly curious, because when, you know, they were doing those games over at Warner Games, they were doing Star Wars and other properties that weren't, you know, necessarily Warner Brothers properties. So
yeah, it's kind of funny how that will work, you know. Yeah, because obviously Warner Brothers had a relationship with Lego. Then Lego, of course, has gotten into licensing properties as well. And then somehow they were able to get those properties over to Warner Brothers Games. You know, that is kind of crazy, but I guess it gives you like that one little sliver of hope. But again, it's that last line from the article that I mentioned. It's like, now Warner Brothers would have to play nice and be willing to give Batman over to Universal. Even if it's Lego Batman, I just don't see Warner Brothers playing nice. That's the bottom line.
Well, I think the bottom line, in all honesty, Eric, is not Warner Brothers playing nice. I think it's like you know, just money playing nice. I mean, I think if somebody hasn't, well, I guess now Warner Brothers is a part of Discovery, so maybe that's changed. But we heard all those rumors that, you know, I heard a lot of those rumors that there was talk that, you know, Discovery was just going to placeholder Warner Brothers and sell it off for parts, essentially. And there's been all these crazy rumors about someone's going to come in and buy DC Comics. And, you know, ever since the AT&T merger went through, there's just insanity because, you know, AT&T looked at Warner Brothers as, wow, this is a bunch of debt we just assumed. How do we get rid of this? So, you know, prior to Discovery buying Warner Brothers, I think LEGO could have had, you know, DC maybe, you know.
Well, Discovery didn't buy Warner Brothers. We covered that in the Streaming Wars segment.
I'm sorry, they merged.
That's right. Not what happened. And in point of fact, you know, I just have to make this clear because we did report on this before. You know, that basically AT&T, you know, their shareholders are actually ending up with the lion's share of that entire agreement. So it's a kind of a unique circumstance, and the only thing I can compare it to, and I did it at the time, is what Viacom did when they split CBS and Paramount, and they were two independent companies. You know what I mean? They just split them for whatever reason. Totally contrary, by the way, to any other business trend that I know of, because every other business trend is to consolidate, right? It's to consolidate as much as possible. And that's what AT&T was trying to do. They were trying to, you know, like on paper, I think it looks good. It's like this massive telecommunications company acquires a media company. You know, it's basically, you know, it's like they kind of go together, right? At least in today's digital age, they kind of make sense. But It makes sense on paper. In reality, I think the AT&T guys were like, we don't get this. We don't get how to make, you know, movies, and we don't get how to make television shows. We don't get how to make comics. We don't even get how to make games, you know? So it's like, we don't understand any of this. This is a terrible match. We got to do something about this. And ultimately they decided, Discovery's sitting over here, and they're actually sitting very well. You know, this almost in a way kind of delves into Streaming Wars. It's like, you know, they decide Discovery's got kind of a good model, because they're producing a lot of new content. They seem fairly well poised for the Streaming Wars because their content tends to be a lot cheaper to produce than the stuff that Warner Brothers is making, that, you know, on HBO Max, or, you know, the stuff that Disney's making, or even Netflix, because mostly they're making like narrative shows. Disney Discovery has a completely different model, right? They're basically making like documentaries and stuff like that, you know, almost a form of reality TV, if you will, which is much, much cheaper, much, much cheaper to produce. And they're able to produce at a volume these other places can't, because it's so expensive, whereas they're doing something that's much cheaper. So anyway, they basically decided this would be a good match. And that's what they're doing, is now it's a new company, right? And creatively called Warner Brothers Discovery. So, you know, that's you know, that's the situation there. So, you know, my personal opinion, I think that was probably the best thing for AT&T to do, because they still keep their shareholders. I am a AT&T shareholder, by the way, full disclosure, I own AT&T stock. You know, they kind of got a sweet deal for their shareholders, you know, in terms of having a stake in the new company without having to like sell it off for parts, you know, because they didn't do that. They could have. I mean, Warner Brothers Games is interestingly enough, they're still kind of on the chopping block, as I understand it. There's been no commitment yet as to what's going to happen to the different parts of Warner Brothers Games. In fact, GameSpot, you know, I talked about an article they had. They were saying that right now, the official word is some of it will be retained and some of it will be sold. So it's still a matter of debate as far as what's going to happen there.
Well, and my apologies. I didn't mean to misspeak. I guess the point I was trying to make is that there's been so much turmoil over, you know, with Warner Brothers and everything that's going on, you know, in a slightly different set of circumstances, I wouldn't have seen where maybe they could have made a deal to secure those rights until the Discovery, you know, Warner deal went through, you know. And again, my apologies. I'll be honest here. Even when we were reporting on that, I still didn't quite understand what the deal was.
There's nothing I know of to compare it to. You know what I mean? It's kind of a strange arrangement that they came to with Discovery. But basically what they're doing is it's they're forming another company, you know, and it's basically Warner Brothers and Discovery together, and that's going to be the new company, you know. So it's complicated. It does get complicated sometimes. And again, it is contrary to what you see, you know, because there's been all sorts of talk about, for instance, you know, Apple buying a studio, you know, but Apple so far has decided to do their own thing where they're producing their own content, but they usually do it, you know, in partnership with another studio. So that's why the question becomes, why haven't they acquired a studio yet? Or, you know, that kind of a thing. So it gets really weird. It gets really complicated. I think we had a glitch there. Universal obviously has Peacock. You know, Peacock is their contribution right now. So as far as the streaming wars goes, but they obviously still produce theatrical content and things like that. And in an ideal world, it would be nice if Warner Brothers could say, all right, you guys have the Lego rights. You can make the next, you know, Batman Lego movie. But I just don't see them doing that.
Well, I think it's a shame. The Lego Batman movie is actually one of the, if I were ranking all the Batman movies, I would actually put the Lego Batman movie actually up pretty high in my list because I thoroughly enjoyed it so much. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I did too. I did too. I thought it was a lot of fun. You know, the whole the password, you know, for the Batcave was awesome. And right. The fact that they would say that, you know, Iron Man sucks, you know what I mean? Right. So, yeah. that's exactly what, right. And I've said that a billion times. That's exactly how I felt about Iron Man before Roddy Downey Jr. was that he was a cheap imitation of Batman. So I always felt that way growing up.
Well, there you go. All right, very cool. Do you have anything else for pop culture? Or are we good to go do some streaming wars?
I actually don't have anything for streaming wars. Did you have anything for streaming wars?
I don't either, actually.
We did actually delve into it a little bit, so that was good that we did get into it a little bit as far as talking about what's going on with all these different companies. Sometimes it does kind of have like a, it's hard to know where the one line ends and the next one begins, but you know, because there is so much crossover when we're talking about these companies, because literally almost every single one of them, I would say every single one of them, because even like Sony, for instance, which doesn't have their own streaming platform per se, they've made all these deals with Disney Plus and Netflix, right? So everybody is you know, up to their eyeballs in that stuff and in the streaming wars. There's just no doubt about it.
Right. All right, cool. Well, in that case, unless anyone in the Rogues guy has anything else they want to say, maybe we should take a look at going to the outro. Now, you and I had discussed it. Do we want to do Clone Wars for?
Yes. That for Sunday, for our Sunday Rogues retrospective. That sounds good to me. We're going to be talking about the 2D Clone Wars.
Yeah, which is was recently uploaded actually to Disney Plus, so that's going to be where you can check it out. Unless you happen to own the DVDs of the seasons. I own them. Eric, I think you do as well.
Actually, I got them from my brother for his birthday.
Oh, okay.
He owns them. I do not.
Well, he owns them. All right. Well, there you go. You think he'll let you borrow them?
I wouldn't even ask. I'll just check it out on Disney Plus.
All right. Well, there you go. There you go. All right. But I quite enjoyed the Gendy Tarkowski, the Clone Wars. So that'll be fun to talk about that on this Sunday. So again, this Sunday is going to be at 12:05, and that's Pacific Standard, right, Eric?
Yes, that's Pacific time. You know, that's 3:00 or 3:05 Eastern time.
All right. Well, there you go. So that's what we're going to be doing on Sunday. We'll do Star Wars: The Clone Wars, the 2D version, which is on Disney Plus. That'll be on Sunday. Again, 12:05 Pacific Standard Time. And, we want to encourage you, those of you that are watching, please tell people about the show. Please tell them about what we're doing over here. Please share the show and let people know. The thing that makes the show more entertaining for us is when those of you in the Rogues Gallery actually comment. That's what makes it entertaining for us. We enjoy the discussion. We enjoy the debate. That's what we want to actually do here on the show, is have a fun, lively discussion about whatever the topics are. Again, Thursdays now, our Basic Collector's Corner, 7 p.m. focusing right now on my end anyway, primarily on trading cards. Eric's been talking a lot about action figures and stuff, which is really cool. Then we do, again, the new segments like we've been doing. And then on Sunday is our Rogues retrospective. That'll be on Sunday, 12:05. All right. Very cool. All right. If no one has anything else. All right. I want to thank you for watching this episode of the Retro Rogues Live, in this Collector's Corner episode. Want to encourage you, please go over and check out my t-shirt company, KirbyTees.com. That's KirbyTees.com. You can see a lot of the fun things we have over there, such as the Skeletor and the Brains Are Magic t-shirt by Sarah Aerosmith, as well as a lot of Retro Rogues t-shirts that are available there as well. We'd like to encourage you, please consider purchasing a Retro Rogues Live t-shirt and supporting what we're doing here on the show. We would greatly appreciate your support. But enough about that. I want to thank my great co-host, Mr. Eric Alexander, for bringing his unique perspective as always. And again, my apologies, Eric. I don't mean to cut you off when we get to the action figure portion of the show. I'm just always looking at that clock, realizing I've talked too long. Anyhow, please tell the folks who'll be watching or listening at home where they can learn more about you on the interwebs.
Well, I'm most active on Twitter. You can find me there at BassGod14. That's at BassGod14. My DMs are wide open, so you can always just send me a message that way if you would like, and you can give me a suggestion. If you know a cool rumor, or if you want something, want us to review something, let us know, and we will take a look at it for sure. That includes, obviously, television shows. That includes movies. That includes action figures. That includes comic books, trading cards. We can fit it in somewhere. Between the Collector's Corner and the Rogues Retrospective, we will find a way. Unfortunately, we don't have any additional new comments in the Rogues Gallery. I do want to encourage folks, as Dave said, do feel free to talk and also to even disagree. You know, we can have a lively discussion on here, and I think we can be adults about it, and we can be respectful at the same time. So please, I encourage you in future episodes, please feel free to make your views known on the Retro Rogues Live. And that will have to be the last word.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live podcast. You can learn more about Eric Alexander and find the live show on either Twitch, YouTube, or Twitter by searching for BassGod14. That's BassGod14 on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. If you are curious about co-host Dave Beatty, you can see some of his art, find social media links, and so much more at his website, DaveBeatty.com. That's DaveBeatty.com. If you enjoyed this episode of the Retro Rogues Live, be sure to like, share, and subscribe.